right. It's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Does he sound out of breath, folks?
Just by the skin of our chinny chin chin.
You know, when he was so worried about me opening the show, he probably should have a traffic ticket to get here, but he was doing a very good thing this afternoon.
Actually, I would have been here earlier had a couple students not let their car die right in the middle of 17th Street.
I hate it when that happens.
On a soccer Wednesday. But it's a football Wednesday here on In the Zone. We're taking your phone calls as always. 333-2665. Anything in the world of sports, but football in particular. We head towards another college football weekend with the Hoosiers on the road going to Wake Forest for their first true big boy opponent, if you will, of the year. It's been a decent schedule. Let's not underplay the schedule. I think it's been a decent schedule for them so far. But Wake, an ACC team, not a great one at this point in time, but one that's in the last few years had some talent flushed through it. So it's going to be a challenge. There's no question about that. Folks around town trying to bring ESPN's College Game Day to town. So we'll cool the jets on that talk here in a little while.
Kidding.
But before we get to go there, we get to rip on the Colts because, let's be fair, through two games, we all thought, or a lot of people said, hey, it's just the preseason, no big deal. You get over it. They're always lousy in the preseason. Preseason doesn't mean anything. The problem is if it carries over into the regular season, which it's now done, for two straight games for the Colts, not only are they not really stopping anybody, although to be fair, their defense was not the problem on Monday night against the New York Jets, but up front, they look like a sieve in that offensive line. And Terry, here's the problem. You've heard me say this more times than you care to hear again and repeat and say. The offensive line is still not solved. The interior of that offensive line is still a problem. And the solutions that they've brought in on the interior of that offensive line continue to not get the job done. And what you saw on Monday is a manifestation of the time of that occurring over and over and over. And I'm afraid it could head further that direction. I trust Andrew Luck. I think he's one of the best in the league right now. But the more you let this guy get hit, the more this guy gets pressure, especially if it comes up the middle, but more so if it comes free, the more he's going to get skittish. He's going to make quick decisions. He's going to make bad decisions. All quarterbacks do that. And Monday night was a perfect example of all of the worst of that of 3 years culminating in one game.
Yeah, and it caused some overthrows, which led to the interception early, went off Andre Johnson's fingertips. He was high numerous times Monday night. It's just, and for whatever reason, the Colts seem to not have, and this is also partially through Indy radio, but partially I noticed that they don't have any quick three-step drops and pops. They don't have anything to where he's right. Got the ball fast, quick drop, and get rid of it. And I think also he holds the ball too long, waiting, because he's 6'5", 6'4", right. He's strong, he knows he can take that first hit, but I'm with you. I mean, why do we want to risk the chance of him getting hurt and having to go through another one of those? And a pathetic effort Monday night.
Look, I've said this before. You know, the idea of constant or consistent pressure because of a weakness of an offensive line to a quarterback, it is something that may manifest itself in the moment. And you definitely saw that the other night, is when there was pressure in his face coming at him, free rushers, he threw up some awful, awful passes and awful decisions. Those are plays that he could probably make better with his feet. A sack would have been just fine. Throwing it right out of bounds would have been just fine. Any of those things would have been better than the interceptions. So you see it in the moment. And with any quarterback who gets pressure, you'll see it in the moment. What you don't know is what pressure over the course of a year, 2 years, 3 years will do to someone's decision-making over time. This is where you get into the Ryan Leafs of the world or the David Carrs, not Derek or whoever it is that's now, but the one that was the number one draft pick overall. You get into those realms where those guys play for a while. Jeff George was like this. He was a terrific arm, terrific quarterback when he didn't have guys screaming at him all the time up the middle. When you continue to get that pressure, it continues to rush you. Your clock speeds up. I'm not sure Andrew Luck is there yet, but through two games of this year, it sure looks like he knows that pressure is coming and doesn't feel all that, you know, all that faithful in his offensive line.
And as Chuck Pagano said, he's been that way for 3 years. We haven't had any help.
And we've talked about that.
And we have.
He has been spectacular for the pressure he's received up till now. He got hit 71 times last year, was the most in the NFL by quite a bit. You can't continue. I think I put this on Twitter. chaos is not a strategy. Okay. Andrew Luck can make good things happen out of chaos, but you don't want your strategy of your offense from a building your program standpoint to be chaos. It was the same thing with Antoine Randle-El. He was phenomenal when things got chaotic. But if you think you're going to go into a game and plan that chaos is going to win you the game, then you're a bad coach and you're a bad GM and you're making bad decisions.
Well, we did have a bad coach when Randle-El was here. Anyway, no, I get you. And also one of the best quarterbacks in our franchise, our future is gonna, if mentally is not going to get to him, physically it's going to get to him at some point. Now these guys, at a blocking standpoint for Frank Gore, I mean, running wise, he didn't have a bad game.
They weren't holding, No, you're exactly right. No. I mean, you're exactly right. There was a couple plays where they were called back for holding, but there were also some plays that were very good in the run game.
Yeah, I mean, and let's face it. I mean, you get right down to the bottom line is, and we bring in Gore, we bring in Johnson, we draft a wide receiver in the first round, and the defensive line, which the defensive seven, I thought played very well Monday night.
I don't have a lot of complaints about that. I'm still not sure how it'll hold up over you know, the season, but so far, I think at the very least, the two rookies have very much impressed.
Yeah, but didn't address the offensive line in the least without just picking up a few other people or moving Muhart to a different position, and it is only two games, and I would like to think the Colts are going to play better, but I'll tell you what, the lack of playing time for the starters in the preseason and the lack of some talent on that line is going to cost this team very dearly if they don't put it together.
I've been on GM Ryan Grigson for a while now, and we will continue that when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Terry with you in the zone. You're back in the zone with Dave and Terry here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. We're talking Colts football right now. They are 0-2 to start the season, losing at Buffalo and to the New York Jets. Let's be fair, a pair of good defenses and certainly good defensive fronts, certainly good defensive lines. Also, a pair of coordinators that are going to do some crazy stuff for you. They're going to show you looks. They're going to pull looks. They're going to do some nutty stuff to you. There's no question. So you could very easily say, and I think this is fair, the Colts may very well have faced two of their tougher tests in the first half of the season in these first two games. Obviously, the Patriots stands out there too, stand out. Right now, you know, these are two tough defenses, and you know, the Jets are always a little bit of a punching bag for people. I'm not sure that's entirely fair this year. Again, two good defenses, so there is that. But that said, there's been constant pressure on Andrew Luck in the last two games. All right, now is when I lay it on Grigson here, because we've heard a lot in the offseason now and leading up to this first game and just after it about how there may be a rift between Pagano and Grigson. And, you know, if I'm Pagano, I don't doubt it at all. To be fair, Chuck Pagano is a defensive guy, and the defense has not been great by any stretch. I will stand up for him. The majority of the money, certainly the big money, certainly the big picks, have been on the offensive side. You mentioned, you referenced the first one, and that's the number one pick of Philip Dorsett in the offseason when you desperately needed offensive linemen and defensive linemen. It certainly doesn't help with Andrew Luck. Right now, he's a guy that can't even win the punt return job after 1 week. He had it snatched from him already. It's Griff Whalen. They have Griff Whalen out there fair catching it. That's where this number one pick is right now, is they barely play him. Dante Moncrief, I guess, lit a fire under Dante Moncrief. He's been great in two weeks. I will give Grigson credit where credit is due, and he's got certainly some picks, and especially in the Andrew Luck draft. Andrew Luck is a no-brainer, but Kobe Fleener, Dwayne Allen, T.Y. Hilton, those are all very nice picks. Vic Ballard would have been had he been able to stay healthy. That didn't work out. I think just Josh Robinson is a nice pick.
All offensive picks you just named, too.
Yeah, I think Jack Muhort's got a long career in front of him. I'm not sure he's great right now, but I think he's going to be playing for a long time. I like a couple of the defensive guys, the two defensive linemen, the safety gathers. Certainly the Vontae Davis pickup was very nice. And if you give Greg Toler health, I think a little bit, and maybe not have to be compared to Vontae Davis all the time, he'd probably get a better grade from a lot of people. The problem is there's been a lot of picks on that defensive line that led you to the point where you're playing two rookies right now and another free agent pickup in Kendall Langford. Cody Redding is the one good defensive pickup that I can think of that's really been a great positive. I mean, DeQuell Jackson's fine. Jarrell Freeman's out of the CFL. That's fine. But I'm trying to get to how you've got two physical guys, two guys you know want physical football in offensive lineman in Ryan Grigson and a defensive physical nutty type guy in Chuck Pagano, and they can't create any physicality on this team. I don't get it. I mean, it's like they're not even paying attention to it and don't consider it.
And if that, and that's what it looks like from the outside. That's what it looks like for me too. And if that's the case, it's no wonder there's a rift there. We've been trying to decide if Grigson hired Pagano or if
he was hired. Grigson was 2 weeks before Pagano was.
Okay. So if it is his coach and they've had now starting their fourth year to be on the same page, have progressively, while they've had the same record all 3 years and progressively got better in the playoffs, you would think this would be such a harmonious situation down the road in Indianapolis. But, you know, whatever's going on there, you know, the defense has definitely been overlooked. We've got a great fantasy team when you look at all the receivers and a quarterback and a running back, but we don't have a solid line. And thank God the couple of the rookies up front on defense, because, like I said, I thought the linebackers in the front the other night did a tremendous job against the Jets. Maybe they just wore down because there's not a lot of depth behind them. And, my God, one of the best secondaries, the two of the better corners in the league are both out right now. And Darius Butler didn't play the other day.
Yep.
So.
And Vontae Davis went out in the second quarter.
Vontae played and got a couple of penalties and made a nice play, but then now he's on concussion protocol. Who knows if he'll play Sunday? The best word I can describe so far this season is dumpster fire.
Well, I think that's accurate. Unfortunately, I don't know any other way to do it, because if you're coming out right before the first game of the season and having reports all over the nation, and this isn't some local person who's digging up some dirt. I mean, these are Jay Glazer and Jason Lockenfora and guys that are connected all over the place, and they're talking about a rift between the two. First of all, I don't doubt there's a rift. And I say this again, the minute I heard it, I said, why aren't we talking about the GM here? I mean, seriously, you want to, like, if you want to talk about replacing Pagano because he hasn't been good enough with what he's given, look, I'll buy a little bit of that. I will. I get it. He's a defensive guy. The defense has never been great. I get that. I mean, you can make that argument. They've been 10-6 and 11-5 since Andrew Luck has been here. I mean, that's a lot of Andrew Luck. But if you don't think the coach deserves a little bit of credit for doing that too, with what he's been given, you're nuts. I'm going to go through our major draft picks here again. The first year, again, this is what Ryan Grigson is still hanging his hat on, is Andrew Luck, Kobe Fleener, Dwayne Allen, and T.Y. Hilton. You just gave a ton of money to T.Y. Hilton, and I like T.Y. Hilton a lot. I'm not sure he's a ton of money guy, but you gave it to him. I'd like to keep him. We are going to keep him now. But look, long term, who knows? We might lose both the tight ends. We're not sure. The next year is Bjorn Warner, Hugh Thornton, Khaled Holmes, Montori Hughes. Again, you just let Hughes go. You thought he was a steal. He'd never live up to anything. Khaled Holmes is starting at center, but, you know, he's at least been more solid than the center position appeared last year. Hugh Thornton hasn't been able to contribute yet. And Bjorn Warner, I'll give Bjorn Warner, again, a little bit of credit here. I think there's a lot made out of you when you're a first-round draft pick. When you're 24th, I think you maybe back it off a little bit, and you should. He's out there hustling. He's not dogging it out there. By the way, Jerry Hughes is killing for the Buffalo Bills right now.
Yes, he is.
So if you want to talk about getting rid of somebody after 2 or 3 years because you thought he was a busted number one, maybe you ought to just settle down a little bit. Jack Muhort was a number two. Dante Moncrief and Jonathan Newsom, those are good picks. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a couple in there. But this last one, you've got Perry, Anderson, and Gathers, I really like. Dejon Smith's out for a while now. Philip Dorsett, again, he's a first-round draft pick. He's in the 29th spot. You got to contribute eventually. I hate to say it. I'd have to argue that the draft has been Ryan Grigson's good part, and I just told you partly why it stinks.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. And at this point, he had a chance to pick up that other offensive lineman from Philadelphia, who's where Grigson came from. Mm-hmm. His name escapes me. Free agent, probably was going to be maybe a little higher, but I don't. We don't.
Yeah, the guy, he's making some money. Evan Mathis.
Yeah,
Evan Mathis.
And didn't even. I don't. I'm sure we made him an offer, or at least talked to him. You would hope so. When you that is when only Costanzo and the center that we just picked up are the only two guys you can depend on in that line. I would have, even if it's for 1 year, and then negotiate with the guy later, give him the money,
right,
and keep Andrew upright.
Well, let's look at the free agency side of thing or trades. Vontae Davis knocks it out of the park.
Beautiful.
You had to be critical, and I was at the time, because Vontae Davis was in trouble in Miami, had more or less been suspended by them, and you gave a high draft pick for him. He's been every bit worth that pick. No question. That's a knock it out of the park. Corey Redding, that was a great pickup. He was not only a calming influence, he was also pretty darn good making plays for his age. But he, at his age, is one of the anomalies, usually, for those ages, to be coming back or coming in as a big, addition. What I didn't like about free agency this year, Frank Gore and Andre Johnson are two of my favorite players in the NFL from the standpoint of they're true professionals. They're guys that they're fall forward type of guys in football, which means if they get hit, they're going to gain the extra yard falling forward because they're smart enough to know in the game of football, every yard counts. They're smart. They work hard. They're true professionals. They're extremely skilled. They've been extremely productive. The problem is they're both 34 years old. And those are not the times to get a running back and a wide receiver. They're not. You just let Reggie go at 35 or 36. Those are not the best times to bring those guys in. I thought Frank looked really good last year. But how many years do you think you're going to get out of Frank Gore at top level? Andre Johnson has struggled to get open, just like all the Colts receivers are, and he struggled to catch the ball. Again, we'll see. He could end up getting better. It'd be nice if he had some of these deep threats around him to take some pressure off him. But these are guys, and Todd Harriman's is 35, 36 years old. He's blocking people with his butt, people. He got turned around at the snap and had to block a guy running towards Andrew Luck and just trying to put on the brakes, blocking with his back. Terry, help me out. I mean, you got a guy who is your GM, who's an offensive lineman, and he doesn't seem to get the idea of this job right now, which is you've got to go young. And you've got to protect the physical spots, and they just haven't done it. And when they have done it, they certainly haven't been successful.
Well, I'm in a loss of words too because of the fact that he was an offensive lineman. And the other thing, Dave, it's when you've got some people in a new position, you got some new people, and again, it's like I said in the other segment, they don't play during the preseason. They have no chance to develop chemistry, to figure out how to cover for each other, to just get used to a rhythm of that line operating together, and not to mention working with Frank Gore, seeing where his holes are when an offensive line, can get in a rhythm and work as one, like so many of Peyton Manning's did. We didn't have, Jeff Saturday was all-pro center several times. Coach Tarik Glenn, when he was there for the first Super Bowl, was all pro.
Yep.
And then we just had solid guys,
absolutely,
but no all pros, very few, but all solid that stayed together for how many years?
So several, yeah.
And the only thing they never could replace effectively was Glenn.
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. And that group flourished for years. We don't have that. Did you happen to see the graphic of how many guards, tackles, centers, everybody but Costanzo we had went through in the 3 years Andrew Luck's been here?
Well, think about the offensive line pickups just alone.
Yeah.
There was Donald Thomas. There was Gazdar Charalis. Now there's Todd Harriman's. Lance Lewis was not a big pickup. He was a waiver wire type of pickup. Well, what do you expect?
Yeah.
The draft picks have been Khaled Holmes, Hugh Thornton, Jack Muhort. Jonathan Harrison was brought in as an undrafted guy. A.Q. Shipley has been here about four different times. I still don't know how you end up bringing in A.Q. Shipley on a Tuesday, starting him on a Sunday, and then the following Sunday, and then relegating him to the bench the rest of the year behind Jonathan Harrison, who was an utter disaster almost the entire year.
You're not the only one.
I still don't know what happened in that. I don't know. A.Q. Shipley wasn't a Pro Bowler, but what happened that in a week and a half's time, you decided he wasn't good enough to above an undrafted free agent who doesn't know the plays?
And isn't he starting somewhere now?
He's
whoever
playing,
picked
least,
him up, I know he's playing, if not maybe in
again,
a backup
he's not
role.
A Pro Bowler.
No.
But it was just a weird situation.
The Colts could use him
It was a really weird situation. And then, boom, the Boom Heron situation was strange. the Vic Ballard. You keep Vic Ballard at the end, and then 3 days later, you're letting him. I don't know what's going on there. I mean, I'm sorry for Vic Ballard. I would have loved to see it work out, but you've got a couple injuries like that. You're done. You're probably done. So sorry, but that's the way it all works. And then, you know, again, on the defensive line, Ricky Jean-Francois last year, the Bjorn Warner thing. I like Bjorn Warner. He's fine to have on your team. You don't need to get rid of Bjorn Warner.
No.
But he's not worked out to the hype that a number one pick would be. I just you want to get rid of the coach. I don't necessarily have a lot of qualms about it. I don't think it's the right thing because I think the team loves him, and I think he's a good coach. And I think Pep Hamilton is better than most people give him credit for. But when you don't fix and you don't have solutions over 4 years to your physical spots, you're going to lose in the NFL. You can get away with it in college. You know what? You can run circles around people if you got a lot of speed guys. But in the NFL, you've got to win the physical battle. We can go through, and I encourage people to go through the playoff teams for the last 6 years and just look at how many of those teams are soft and how many of them were physical teams up front. And I guarantee you're going to talk about 85% of them are teams that dominate up front or are known for what they do up front. I guarantee it. That's the way it works in the NFL. We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. So the Colts season is all over. You can just pack it in and sell your jerseys and do all that. They do have a game this weekend. We'll talk about that when we get back from the break. And then we'll move over to the Hoosiers, who have a road trip down to Wake Forest on Saturday. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Terry with you in the zone. Back in the zone with Dave and Terry here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Programming notes real quick. We got Reds baseball at 8 o'clock. They are in St. Louis. Tomorrow night, we've got NFL football, 8 o'clock. Washington at the New York Giants. An NFC East battle. Or is that a patty cake war? I don't know what you call it.
One of the two.
And then Friday night, John Callahan and I will be out in Ellettsville for Edgewood football as North Putnam comes to town. North Putnam, always a very good team, so that'll be a heck of a challenge. For Jerry Bland's group, we will have Chalk Talk at 6:30 and kick off at 7 o'clock. That assumes that North Putnam's able to make it there, I guess, with all the roads in southern Indiana disasters. But for now, it's scheduled for 7 o'clock. And then Saturday, we will have college football, TCU at Texas Tech is our broadcast starting at 4 o'clock for pregame. And then Sunday, Colts at Tennessee at noon and Denver at Detroit at 7:30. So, again, the good news here for the Colts is the next three games are conference, or I should say division games. We all know what the division generally looks like. Certainly doesn't look any harder, I would say, this year at Tennessee, Jacksonville, and at Houston, their next three games. So that's a nice little stretch. Still, two of them are on the road. Houston, that's J.J. Watt and Vince Wilfork. So with this offensive line, I wouldn't get too far past them just yet. But, Terry, I mean, they've got to get this. They've got to get the interior figured out. They certainly got to get Frank Gore involved like they tried on Monday night. And they've got to get some consistency in the passing game. We can't let Andrew Luck off the hook. I've been concerned this entire time what all the hits and all the pressure will do to a quarterback, and I'm afraid of what it's doing to him. But he has been able to make better decisions than this most of the time. He made some awful ones on Monday night.
Yeah, he did. And a lot of it is trying to do too much, trying to will your team to a win. In some places, just a first down, move the chains. Even the drive, Dave, that they got the score off of was one of the ugliest long play drives. You know, I don't want to say of all time, but, I mean, it was like grinding it out. Like, you know, you hear Tiger Woods always say he was grinding it out there for a two under par. Well, that's what that drive looked like. And at the time, we were only down 10-7.
Yeah.
Only down 10-7 with 10 minutes to go. And nothing became of it. Yeah, you've got three divisional foes that normally you figure you've got these. In the last 2 years, the Colts are 12-0 inside their division. Of course, they're 10-12 outside their division in that same time period. But Tennessee, I think we've won the last 7 in a row or in like 11 out of 12 or something like that. So, you know, it's a game you'd think you should win. But, yeah, if they – you know, are the Colts as bad as they've seemed in the first two games? No, I don't think – I mean, yes, they're bad right now. Mm-hmm. Will they stay that bad? No, I don't think so. But unless they get some – unless they find another way – to shore up that line with a trade, a free agent pickup, moving Dwayne Allen to tackle. I don't know. Something.
Yeah.
It's not going to get any easier after these three games. Then we've got New England and I think a bye after that, or vice versa. But New England's after these three. And, you know, 1-1 would have been the worst I thought we'd be after this.
I thought we'd lose at Buffalo.
I did too.
Before the season. You know Rex Ryan's going to have a crazy defense. It had a good defense to begin with, so you knew he was going to throw a lot of looks at you.
Yeah.
You didn't know what their offense was going to look like, but you figured with Rex it was going to be a physical game. And honestly, I didn't think the Colts defense would be up to it. And so I'm not surprised that they lose at Buffalo, but to look inept and to make so many bad decisions, bad plays, the front to look that bad and get Andrew Luck that much pressure on him. And again, while the defense, I thought, held its own, you're seeing injuries in that backfield. And if there was a spot you thought could handle an injury or two, it was the defensive backfield, not three or four. And that right now is your problem, is your top three corners are banged up right now.
They're going to – and you don't know if any of the three are going to play Sunday.
Yeah,
Toler, I don't think, will play for sure. And being on a short turnaround from Monday to Sunday, I'm not sure the Vontae Davis will. And I didn't know the extent of Darius Butler's injury. So.
Darius Butler, hip, did not practice. Vontae Davis, shoulder. Okay.
Thought he had concussion.
Limited practice. Greg Toler, neck, limited practice today.
So we'll see. One good thing, you've got a rookie quarterback in Marcus Mariota, who had a stellar game against the Browns. Ho-hum, it's the Browns.
Yeah.
And came back to life a little bit last week, but still made some impressive plays in that offense. And, you know, again, only thank goodness he's a rookie. Hopefully we can put some pressure on him. That's the other thing. We're not putting any pressure on anybody either.
Are we right to be concerned about the direction this season goes after two games that look like this, or are we overreacting vastly here?
I'm never one of these guys, falling guys, and after two games and you've still got 14 games left to play, you know, my glasses half full type thing says, let's don't get too stupid yet. But these two losses to start the season, in my mind, were tremendously worse than the two losses we had last year to start the season, to where, you know, people, of this course, in Indy, this guy is falling every day they lose, so it doesn't matter. They're going to fire everybody and go from there. But I'm not going to get too concerned yet, but these three division games will really point to see if where we're going. If we're 1-4 or 2-3 after these three games, there's a serious problem.
Here's my problem with it and why I'm concerned. The two strengths that I would have pointed to for the Indianapolis Colts heading into the season right now were quarterback and defensive backfield. I would not call, and I'll call special teams. I don't think special teams has been bad. You know, you miss a field goal, okay. I'm not going to say Andrew Luck is a problem right now, but the decisions that he made the other day were awful. And some of the throws and the spots that he put him in were awful. And he got outplayed by Tyrod Taylor in the game before that.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll continue. I like Andrew Luck. I have the most faith in Andrew Luck. But again, the history of what's been going on up there and how much they've allowed him to get hit concerns me over time. That's when you see it to somebody. If it doesn't happen immediately, and it usually will in a game, then there's a cumulative effect of this sort of thing. And then with the defense backfield, it's just injuries. And the only good things, the bright spots for me have been Dante Moncrief, as I mentioned, who, you know, again, if that pickup lit a fire under him, then fantastic, because he's got all the tools to be a big-time receiver in the mold of an Andre Johnson. So, I mean, that's the one thing maybe that pickup pays off for is letting Dante see a guy just like him making plays. But it's injuries in that backfield. The other positive has been the rookies on the defensive line.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't been amazing, but they've been making plays. David Perry doesn't allow a lot of movement up in the middle of that. And Hughes and Chapman, you know, were not big movers up front. And Henry Anderson has been in on a lot of plays and making a lot of tackles. So you can point to a couple positives, but it concerns me right now when your two strengths are becoming weaknesses all of a sudden. Andrew Luck's got to be better. And that offensive line, they got to find a way. Whether it's max protect all the time or what, they got to find a way.
Well, when you lose at Buffalo, I'm with you. I called that, and Glass and I talked about it the week you were gone. That doesn't surprise me. But to come home on a Monday night, home
just
crowd,
Saturday getting inducted at halftime, Robert Mathis coming back for his first game in a year and a half.
I thought there wasn't a prayer in hell of losing that game to the Jets. Because, the once again, the Jets the week before, big deal, who they beat. I wasn't too concerned. But right now, when you used to look at it and say, we've got to go through the Patriots, obviously. Denver, Pittsburgh's going to be better. Well, now all of a sudden, Buffalo and New York are better too, and so is Cincinnati. And yeah, all of a sudden now, instead of being one or two in the East, we're in the middle of the pack, if not the end of the pack.
Yeah, the only good news is we got New Orleans in a couple of weeks at home after New England. They don't look very good, but then you go to Carolina and have Denver. Look, 333-2665 is our phone number. Moving on to the college ranks, the Hoosiers at 3-0 right now. They have a road trip to Wake Forest this weekend, 12:30. It's on ESPN3 if you're able to get that online. It's really a lot easier, I think, than maybe you think it is, so you might try that. But also, I believe WNDY
will have the game.
Out of Indianapolis, Channel 23 on at least DirecTV. I believe it's Channel 23 in general. But
I think it's a different channel on UVerse. I know it's either 10 or, I mean, yeah, you can find it, folks.
Yeah,
23 on Comcast.
It's going to be out there. And again, the ESPN online is generally free if you've got cable with somebody you enter your cable provider, and they usually pull that up for you. Got to head down there, 12:30, Wake Forest. Let's start with the Hoosiers right now, over Wake. First of all, they're 3-0. This has not been a road grader schedule, but again, I think it's a respectable schedule for this Indiana team. Florida International is a good team with a good defense. They're not great. They're not going to wow you, but I think they're a good, solid team. They're a physical team, and they have a nice defense, and they did a pretty good job offensively against that. They were not phenomenal, but they did a pretty good job, and their running game was better than I thought it would be against a tough run defense. Then they bring Western Kentucky into town, and again, a little choppy, certainly on the defensive side, sloppy offensively in the first half, but make all the plays in the third quarter and down the stretch and running the ball better. Your assessment of the Hoosiers right now, is it A+? Is it B-ish? Are we overrating all this right now at 3-0?
Well, we're 3-0, and a lot of people thought Western would beat us. I was at that game Saturday. Great, fun game. Again, not much of a crowd, but that's IU football. It'll get better as you win.
Yeah.
But I would right now, I'm going to give us a B+. I think it's great that we're undefeated. The enthusiasm starting to build, a road win here, which out of conference road wins, we've done a little bit better than we do in conference. But I'd give them a strong B+. The only thing that brings them down from an A- in my opinion was the leadoff game against Southern Illinois. Not a good game. You win by one, pretty much a second tier division team. But all in all, I see improvement in the defense. I love the fact that in all three games we've not been scored upon coming out of the locker room. 44-0 in our favor. The coaches are making adjustments, which I never felt they've done well in the past, and the players are responding. They're trending upward with a B+. How's that?
I don't have a problem. It's 3-0. I'm not going to make light of 3-0. 3-0 is 3-0.
Right.
This is not a breeze of a schedule. It was two tough teams back-to-back, and I think at the end of the year, Southern Illinois is going to be looked at as probably a playoff team. I don't know if they're a championship team, but they're a playoff team. I think that's a good team with some good leadership, a lot of good offense or options on the offensive side. I don't think there's any question.
Love their quarterback.
I'm going to throw a couple stats at you here. Through three games, let's think back to 2013. What happened in 2013? This was Doug Mallory's last defense. At the end of the year, it was one of the worst statistically in college football, and ultimately cost Doug Mallory his job. Through three games, this was Indiana State, Navy, and Bowling Green. Now, this was the year we beat Bowling Green pretty handily, but really struggled with Navy. 233 plays against the IU defense through three games, 1,230 yards. That's 410 yards a game. Last year, the opposition was Indiana State at Bowling Green and at Missouri. Now, Missouri was in the hundreds in total offense. This was not the Missouri offense of the previous years. 253 plays, 1,244 yards, 415 yards a game. So just a slight uptick, but a little bit less per play. So far through three games, 230 plays, the lowest of the three, 1,633 yards, 544 yards a game. Southern Illinois, Florida International, Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky's a good offense. They deserve credit. Florida International is not a particularly good offense. It's not horrible by any stretch, but it's not particularly good when we gave up 460-some yards.
But we held them to 22.
We're giving up 544 yards a game through three games on the defensive side. As we said on Monday, there has been one big key for the defense. And if it continues, then the defense will continue to get some praise that will be deserved, and that is turnovers. One thing, turnovers. Turnovers erase a lot of problems. There have been a lot of problems. Don't kid yourself. The defense has not been shut down, great, phenomenal, stopping people all over the place. You can point to the third quarter and shutting people out. That's fantastic. I would argue, why do we figure it out in 15 minutes when we've got 6 days leading up to the game and we don't get anything figured out because our first halves have been atrocious on defense?
True.
But if you continue to get turnovers, you can erase some of those mistakes, and that is what has worked the last couple weeks. So if they continue that, then by all means, first of all, please do. And second of all, you will continue to get talked about pretty well. But let's not sugarcoat it. I mean, the defense has not been great.
No, not been great. Been opportunistic. I knew where you were going with the turnovers when you started with that, because that's the only thing that saved this defense.
It has not gotten turnovers in the past couple years.
That's right, exactly.
So, let's just be fair about that. This is still, we talked about it before the season, extremely young defense. They're playing all kinds of true freshmen in that defensive backfield. A road game against an ACC team who wants a little respect for themselves, and suddenly everybody on campus is talking about ESPN game day next week. We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Terry with you in the zone. Right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Terry on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. I almost blew it, but we got through the show.
You did it. Did good.
We got through it. 333-2665 is our phone number. IU heading down to Wake. Let's address the game day thing real quickly. Okay, so on Twitter, because people who are on Twitter think Twitter is the end-all, be-all and what everybody is paying attention to and rules the world, there's a hashtag. People might understand what hashtags are. Hopefully you do. IUFB football for game day that started earlier this week as people are trying to get the idea that, hey, wouldn't it be great if a 4-0 IU team hosting Ohio State in a week, wouldn't that be great? It's number one Ohio State and they're coming to town and we're 4-0. Come on, it'd be a great thing. They've never been here for game day. I'd love to have ESPN game day in town at some point in the future. This team does not need a bunch of distractions of this sort. You can make all the arguments about benefits, ancillary benefits and all that sort of thing to the program. I'm sure there's probably some truth in all that. Would fans enjoy it? Sure. My question is, would they stick around through the whole fourth quarter or not because of it? Game day ends at noon. The game day starts at 3:30. Would they be there? I don't know. But I don't want this team this week thinking about the possibility of ESPN game day coming to Bloomington. They need to go down there and win. And this is a very young team still. It doesn't need to be hearing that all week long.
I doubt if they will be hearing that very much.
They are from their buddies.
Well,
you can't stop the students around town tweeting on their phones while they're walking around telling the kids, man, it'd be awesome. Corso Herb Street.
Yeah, well, you got to beat Wake Forest first.
And
hopefully the coaching staff will try to take care of some of that stupidity. That would be great. But let's one thing at a time here, and let's go beat Wake Forest, who, it is a road trip. They're 2-1. They don't look like they're very good. Their quarterback's got a high ankle sprain. We don't know if the main QB is going to play, but the backup ran for, 107 yards last week. And that's then just another thing for us to worry about. Can he throw the ball, or is he going to fade back and run all the time against our young DBs? Who knows? As we're coming up on time here, and I'm sure you're going to ask me for a prediction, so I'm going to say IU's going to win. We're going to keep the unicorns and rainbows coming right now, and it doesn't look like Wake has much of an offense. Scoring 30 against Elon does not get me excited, but scoring only 17 against Army and a poor Syracuse team leads me to believe that this is probably an IU 35-14 type of win, maybe 35-17.
Ooh.
I'll go to 35-17. I'll give him another 17.
A couple touchdowns. Look, I am very wary of this game, and I point out, you know, again, first of all, the defense and the numbers it's giving up. Can it get the turnovers to make up for those numbers? Is going to become the theme of this year. It already has been. They have. Those were unexpected because we haven't really seen them over the past, but the numbers have still been enormous. Will they get those turnovers or not to offset that? That is the question going into this week. What I don't like is I don't like the youth. I don't like the youth going on the road to an ACC team. I don't like this right now as a little bit of a jump-up game. Wake certainly thinks that they're not going to be out-talented this weekend by us. So it's a nice skin in their cap if they can get it. I'll go the positive route here because I like our offensive line a lot. I like our running back a lot. And I like the possibility of Nate Sudfeld not making the big mistakes. When he's on, he's on. He's very, very good. But if he can eliminate the big mistake, which is the only thing that's kind of hovering out there about Nate, really, if he doesn't do that, then I think you're very much in the game. And quite honestly, the offense ought to be more potent than what Wake can handle and can keep up with. Ought to. I still worry about the youth of this team because it's still there on the wide receiver position. There's still not a lot of experience with Nate Sudfeld compared to, you know, some quarterbacks that have been starting forever. And it's still very much there all over the defense. And, you know, with any luck, you know, the team's walking around with headphones all week long and not listening to the students around them talking about game day. I'm telling you, that kind of crud a week and a half before a big game. They need to concentrate on this game or they're not getting game day because they're 3-1.
Exactly.
I'll go the positive route. I think they win at Wake, and I think they win 34-24.
Okay.
It's not going to be easy down there. This is not a gimme game.
No.
Like, Southern Illinois should have been a gimme game. This is not a gimme game on the road. I think they can get it, and it's a big one if they do. I mean, 4-0 is big. There's a lot that can be improved on. That's the nice part about this. There's a lot to be realistic about. But 3-0, 4-0, it's still big time for this team because it has to get a bowl this year. It has to show that kind of progress.
Yeah, and one thing Glass and I talked about when you were gone is, and I saw this last weekend, Nate Sudfeld starting to get himself a little back into game shape. He's knocking the rust off.
Mm-hmm.
He was extremely sharp, I thought, Saturday afternoon. So in the first two games, not so much. So he's going to improve. He played well at Missouri last year. The road doesn't scare him. So I predict a victory. It may be a touchdown. I may have the same score with a touchdown late to get us to 2. I like it. IU win.
There you go, folks. All is well. All is well. All will be great next weekend when we come back Monday night. Tomorrow night, we've got NFL football, Washington at the New York Giants. Friday night, high school football continues with Edgewood hosting North Putnam. John Callahan and I will be with you, so tune in for that. And Glass and I will be back on Monday, so tune in then. Have a good weekend. You've been in the zone.